Hello, everybody, and welcome to our vital health topic call for what is today, September 2020. And we were supposed to have a guest speaker today, and she couldn't do it at the relatively last minute. So I stepped in and decided to talk about actually a very pertinent topic and one of my favorites to talk about, which is autoimmune conditions. And we're going to be doing a whole conference, which we'll be announcing soon in actually November. It was originally going to be a live conference, our SHINE conference on autoimmune disease. And we had to kind of put it on hold with all the craziness going on in the world, whether we could have it or not. And unfortunately, we did have to move it to online. So it'll be online, unfortunately, but fortunately, because it makes it available to so many more people. So those of you who are practitioners or like to get into the depth of this, we're going to do 3 whole days on autoimmune disease. So I'm going to give you a little touch of it. Yeah, of what you guys want, you know, what you need to know about autoimmune disease that most doctors aren't telling you. They're just saying, hey, your body's attacking itself and we don't know what to do about it or why. Here's some steroids. Or, oh, it's attacking your thyroid. Here's some thyroid medication, right? Here's some anti-inflammatories. But nobody really has an answer to autoimmune disease in the traditional, I'm not going to even use the word traditional, conventional medical model, right? And I've had these discussions. We have friends who are MDs and have been in practice for years. And I talk to them about Hashimoto's that just goes away when you apply the right tools, or lupus that I've seen go away. And they don't get it. They go, no, that can't be, because that's not what we were taught. You know, we were taught that those things are forever. And I'm like, well, there's some things that cause it, and there's some things you can do to reverse it. So I'm going to share my screen. I put together a little presentation just to go through it, and then I'm hoping to answer whatever questions you guys have, because I know autoimmune disease is rampant. If it were a communicable disease, we'd call it an epidemic or a pandemic, because it's a worldwide, it's endemic around the world, but it's not communicable. Communicable as this in the way that a virus is, right? But it is so rampant that I like to think of it as a pandemic and one that we can solve. And I know several of you have reversed or in the process of reversing autoimmune diseases. So you know that it's possible. It just takes some work. And most people aren't willing to do the work. And I know you guys are, because you're here. You are into empowered self-care. You want to be the master of your health, not giving away your power to the doctors who were trained kind of conventionally and not taught about nutrition and toxicity and lifestyle and attitude and all that. So I'm going to touch on all of this just to give you a taste of, and an empowering taste of where you can go with this. And then we'll open up for questions and invite you if you want to come. We're going to be doing a detailed webinar for practitioners in a couple of weeks, and then announcing the opening of the SHINE conference. And if you guys want to go really deep with it for 3 days with me and a bunch of great guests, you're welcome to do that. So far I've got Terry Walls coming, and I've got Tom O'Brien. He was originally going to speak on the live one, but he's checking his schedule to make sure that he could still do it since we moved it into November. It's a lot easier for us to get speakers when it's online, because even if they're in another city speaking at another conference, which right now none of them are really happening in other cities, so it's easy. But even if they were, they could, you know, we could schedule them on one of their breaks and come. And we've done that. We did that with Anna Kabeca last year at our SHINE conference. She was teaching at a conference in Germany, and she just scheduled it when she wasn't teaching there and came and talked to us online. So I'm excited. And who's excited to hear about autoimmune disease? Yeah. Yeah, who's been touched by autoimmune disease, either you personally or by someone in your life? Yeah, yeah, so many, many, many. It's very rampant, and most people didn't even hear of autoimmune diseases, you know, decades ago, but it's getting more and more rampant as our food supply gets more toxic, as our environment gets more toxic, and as the stress, the emotional stressors continue to rise. And those are the things that we're going to get and see how we can take hold of. So I'm going to share my screen and show you a little bit about autoimmune disease. And let me find my controller for my slides. Here it is. Awesome. All right. So, autoimmunity, lifestyle factors for protecting yourself. Autoimmunity just doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens because there are things that come together in this perfect storm that allow your body to go from protecting you as the main focus to attacking you, as if your body tissues are part of, you know, the outside world trying to get at you. So like always, I like to say that the information I'm presenting is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not medical advice. It's a sharing of my knowledge and education and my experience over the last almost 30 years of being in practice and all the thousands and tens of thousands of people that I've encountered over that time. But you always need to make your own decisions based on your knowledge and in conjunction with a qualified healthcare professional if you have a diagnosed disease and are under the care of one. Doesn't mean that I'm saying that everybody needs to have an MD or, you know, some kind of practitioner that they are under the care of. You know, you can certainly make changes in your diet, your lifestyle, your exposures without having to be under medical supervision. But if you are on medical supervision, if you are in the situation where you're being monitored for a specific disease, especially an autoimmune disease, or you're on medication, then I want you to just make sure that you're being safe with the changes that you make. That all said, let's just start with the basic of what the heck is really an autoimmune disease? What does it mean? Well, we know that, and you probably know it more so lately than ever, that when your body is invaded or exposed to a particular outside influence, let's just say it's a toxin, it's a virus, it's something that's not supposed to be in your body. The immune system is your defense system, and it comes out and goes, okay, let's get rid of this thing. And it creates these things called antibodies. And those antibodies have this whole set of mechanisms that they basically disable, discharge, and boom, kill off whoever the invader is, get rid of it, and put you back into safety. But what if that thing that your body is perceiving is not really dangerous? So for example, two examples of where your body attacks things that aren't really dangerous to you, like a virus or a bacteria, are allergies and autoimmunity. With allergies, you know, some people go get exposed to grass and they start sneezing like crazy, or they get exposed to something like strawberries or something else and their body breaks out, or they have some reaction to something that really isn't dangerous to them, but for some reason the immune system has gone awry and it's actually perceiving that there's a problem here and we need to kill it. With autoimmune disease, we have the issue where the body starts attacking its own tissue. And I'll show you on the next slide all the different places we've identified autoantibodies, auto meaning against self. So antibodies that actually attack. And the whys of it happening, we'll go through some of that. But the actual mechanism is kind of confusing. It's like, well, does the body make antibodies against a particular tissue because it's similar to a previous foreign invader that it's come about and come in connection with? Does it create autoantibodies after it's been exposed and created allergies first, food allergies, and food's gotten into the bloodstream that shouldn't get there, and we start to attack and there's a similarity? There's a lot of theory. There's a lot of the cross-reactivity, molecular mimicry, and a lot of that. And we don't have time to go into all that, you know, philosophical detail. But what I want to do is say that it's the body, its immune system has gone awry, and it starts attacking your tissue. As a result of that, that area, that gland, that hormone-producing gland, that digestive tract, part of the digestive tract, your brain, it starts to malfunction because it's inflamed and being attacked as if it's a foreign invader, and all sorts of symptoms occur. And it could basically be anywhere in your body. We've identified autoimmune diseases in the brain. An example is multiple sclerosis. Some people think autism is autoimmune, maybe, maybe not. And there's other areas of the brain that can be affected by antibodies. The nerves, peripheral neuropathy, right? You develop an inability, a tingling, a numbness, a weakness, pain in the periphery. That can be autoimmune. skin. We see psoriasis and vitiligo and other things like that, eczema, where the body is attacking skin and creating rashes. We see the gut. Wow, that's a G-I-T. Oh, gastrointestinal tract. I was thinking it was spelled wrong, but it's not. The gastrointestinal tract. Celiac disease, diabetes. Actually, all those things can attack in the gut. There's intrinsic factor in your stomach that actually takes the vitamin B12 down to the lower part of the intestine that so that it can get absorbed there. It can't get absorbed midway. And there's sometimes antibodies that are attacking those parietal cells in the stomach that make intrinsic factor, that make stomach acid. So there's all kinds of ways. Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, the list is very long in the gut of things that can happen. In the blood, lupus, right? The blood cells are being attacked. Some people think that maybe leukemia is even an autoimmune disease. You know, the jury's out on some of these. With thyroid, there's Graves' disease, which the attack actually causes the thyroid to be overproducing hormone. And you get that hyperthyroid person who can't keep weight on, is agitated and all that. Or the more common one is Hashimoto's, which is a thyroiditis that causes it, the lowering of the thyroid function. And you get things like constipation and depression and low energy and weight gain and all sorts of things. The most common cause of thyroid dysfunction is actually Hashimoto's thyroiditis. It's about 80%. Some people say 90%. Some people say 98% of all low thyroid is actually autoimmune, but nobody's really testing for it. And that's another story for another day. Bones and muscles, right? We hear people have rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia. The body's actually attacking the joints, the muscles, the collagen in the body. We have problems in the lungs, granulomatosis, asthma, all those things that attack the cells in the lungs that cause them to become inflamed, have difficulty with breathing. One thing that's not here is the kidneys. The kidneys are a really big source of autoimmune attack, glomerular nephritis, and things like that, where the kidneys aren't filtering your blood as well, which can create all kinds of problems. And we're back again to the brain. So this is just a sample. And so what I want to do is take you through how do you create, if you wanted to create an autoimmune disease, how would you do that, right? There's the autoimmune disease in the middle. What are some of the factors? And I've got several models for this. So you just kind of keep getting the different components that are involved in order for you to develop an autoimmune disease. If you're living happy at the beach or up in the Himalayas, perfect air, no stress, perfect food, the likelihood of you developing an autoimmune disease, even if you have the genetics for it, are low. But when you combine these factors, that's where you get into trouble. So genes, there's specific genes, HLA, DQ, DR, and others that you're going to see that predispose you to having an autoimmune disease. But the genes are not your destiny. If you have the genes in absence of these other factors, you're unlikely to develop an autoimmune disease. People don't come out of the womb with autoimmune diseases because they have the factors. Excuse me. They don't. It takes time. Sometimes it doesn't take long. Sometimes kids develop juvenile rheumatoid arthritis or juvenile diabetes because they have the genetics and they have the other factors as well. So let's look at some of the other factors. And this is a broad view and we'll get more granular in a minute. But in toxicity in the food, deficiencies, toxins, stress, infections, all of these things play in. And then the immune regulation, having deficiencies of vitamin D or leaky gut, all of these things come together. And this is a model you'll see a lot, but I'm going to go down a little deeper than that. So you can see all the things that predispose you to having an autoimmune disease. And if you don't have the genetics, you can still develop the autoimmune disease with these other factors in place. It's just less likely and less severe oftentimes, but the genes are the genes, what do they say? Genes load the gun and environment and lifestyle pull the trigger, right? So the recipe for creating an autoimmune disease in more detail, genetic predisposition, toxic overload, and toxins are all around us, guys. It's in the environment outside from the factories and the pollution. It's in the environment in the home. Those beautiful rugs on your floors that are outgassing formaldehyde and other toxins. There are toxins in your paint, in your shower curtains, in your cosmetics. And if you look at the way that most people live their lives, they're generally exposed to 100 to 200 toxins by the time they eat breakfast in the morning. That's before they even eat the food, because of the air fresheners, the paints that are outgassing, the clothing, the chemicals that you put on your face, the cleansers, the makeup, etc. The other thing that we need is nutrient deficiencies. Nutrient deficiencies, vitamin D, other vitamins, vitamin A, vitamin C, zinc, magnesium, all the supportive things for your immune system. When those are deficient, you're going to have more of a tendency to develop an autoimmune disease. One that's overlooked a lot is stress and emotional trauma. Early childhood trauma that you might have forgotten from your conscious mind could still be playing in there. Areas where you might have been abused by a parent, by a relative, by a teacher that are long forgotten. You know, maybe not, maybe on a conscious level, but not necessarily on a cellular level. And those can contribute. A friend of mine, Keisha Evers, she wrote a book, The Autoimmune Puzzle, Solving the Autoimmune Puzzle, where she developed this rheumatoid arthritis when she was in her 30s, and it got her down. And she was like, what the heck is going on? And she went back and she remembered and processed through trauma where she was sexually abused by a teacher, and she kept it in, right? We keep some of that stuff in, and then it attacks our own cells. So stress, current stressors, emotional trauma, and you know, stress is, all these things are stressors, right? Toxics are stressors, nutrient overload, you know, the food supply is tainted. Those are all stresses. And then there's the emotional and mental stress and leaky gut. It's been found that in every case of leaky of autoimmune disease, if we go back, there's some leaky gut, some issue where the gut is not filtering the outside environment from the inside. And you may say, wait, the inside, it's already in me when I eat it. No, it's not. Your digestive tract is an open tube that goes from mouth to anus. And it's not actually inside your body. It's a tube that runs through the inside of your body. The stuff that goes through that tube only gets into your body, into your bloodstream, into the cells, when it passes through the intestinal wall. And it's particularly in the jejunum, although there's other spots along the way, but most of that happens in a part of the small intestine called the jejunum. And if that jejunum develops holes, first of all, hey, this is a toxin. I'm going to try to get through. Nope, can't do it. Got to go out in the poop. Oh, I'm an undigested food particle. I'm, you know, part of your meal that you didn't chew well enough and it didn't get digested. Nope, can't get through. But over time, the constant barrage of those opens up the walls, opens up what's called the tight junctions between the cells down there. And boom, those things do get into the bloodstream. And when they do, your immune system sees them and goes, whoa, let's attack it. And that's where we start with the allergies and the autoimmune process. So leaky gut needs to be looked at. It's never looked at in conventional Western medicine, but it's looked at more so in people who've practiced functional medicine. And, you know, practitioners who have been, you know, studying this for a long time. So those are the things that are required. And so when we look at them here, this is another way to look at it. There's four here. The stress, the emotional stuff is all lumped together, but I felt like I wanted to separate that out. Infections, sometimes some of those stressors are actually Epstein-Barr virus from a mono you had when you were 7 or 8, and it keeps coming back. Herpes infection that's living in your nerve roots and it waits for the stressful times. Cytomegalovirus, hepatitis, all kinds of infections. Gut dysbiosis, you know, an overgrowth of something like Klebsiella or Clostridia, which are normal inhabitants of the gut until they overgrow. And then we get an infection, and you can be going around with an infection like that for decades without realizing it. And you just notice I get gas and bloaty. Doesn't everybody? Everybody must get gassy and bloaty after they eat because watch TV, watch the commercials. Everybody's got to take all these over-the-counter medications. So another look at it is risk factors. And this comes from a lab called Cyrex Labs, right? And they just put it together in this cool little picture. You see the genetics there, you see chemicals coming in, you see infection and dietary proteins, which create allergy. And that's what creates it. So the genes are there and you may have the genes, but it doesn't mean you have to get it. We just have to find out what are the triggers that have initiated it. How do we get rid of that so it doesn't continue to worsen? And then how do we reverse the damage that's caused by this? You know, in many cases, depending on when it's discovered and when things are reversed, it's possible that it's too late to really repair all the damage, but you do the best damage control you can, right? If your thyroid tissue is like just completely creamed from this autoimmune attack for 30 years, it's not, you know, it may not get better, but then on the other hand, it could. You know, even if you've had this autoimmune disease for 40, 50, 60 years, it could get better and your body can heal. I just believe there's such an amazing innate healing power in the body. We just have to figure out how to get out of its way. And that's what we're here talking about. So autoantibodies, you see this down below, these little things with the Y-shaped things, those are antibodies and they're going after things to attack. And on the ends, they're looking for matches. They're looking for something that matches. And if they're the end part of your thyroid tissue looks similar to the streptococcus antibody, that antibody is going to attack it. Or if you've developed a gluten allergy and you're eating gluten and you've got these gluten antibodies floating around, and it tends to gravitate towards thyroid. Dairy allergy antibodies tend to gravitate towards the pancreas. The insulin-producing cells, the islet cells, the beta cells in the pancreas that produce insulin. So that's a contributing factor for type 1 diabetes. So if you've got a family where type 1 diabetes happens, that's a family history, there's a genetic tendency, it's really important how that child is fed and nurtured those early years, right? We don't want to give them cow's milk, dairy, because those things can trigger that immune response. So the areas that we've detected autoantibodies for are thyroid, stomach, the intrinsic factor related to B12, the intestines, ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, inflammatory bowel disease. We have pancreas, the islets of Langerhans, which make insulin. That's type 1 diabetes, or what's called LADA, latent autoimmune diabetes of adulthood. Right? It's just slowly coming on and it resembles type 2 diabetes. And it's often misdiagnosed as type 2 diabetes. I've seen people like this. They think they have type 2 diabetes, but now doc says they have to go on insulin because they can't get it under control. Turns out it's an autoimmune disease. And we've seen people like that get much, much better very quickly. In the brain, there's the cerebellum, which is the back part, which controls your balance. The Purkinje cells, which are protective cells. It can affect all sorts of multiple sclerosis. It can affect the myelin sheaths, connective tissue. We get things like Sjogren's, and we get things like scleroderma, where there's a stiffening of connective tissue, things like RA and other things like that. Muscles, fibromyalgia is oftentimes considered, you know, this wastebasket diagnosis. It's all in your head, just go put you on Prozac. It's actually an autoimmune attack in the muscles, and there's others, myositis and all sorts of others. The kidneys I mentioned earlier, the glomerular nephritis. Skin can be things like eczema, psoriasis, vitiligo, impetigo. The mucous membranes, and there's a disease called Sjogren's, which dries up all your mucous membranes. So you have a dry mouth, dry eyes, and dry vaginal passage. All these things get dry because those mucous membranes are being attacked. The myelin, then that's where we look at multiple sclerosis. The myelin is the sheaths that surround your nerves. And, you know, when you send a signal from your brain to your big toe, there's a long way to go, right? And any of us adults, there's a long way to go. And if it was just that the nerves were just transmitting the way they transmit, it could take a while before you say, move my big toe, and it actually moves. So the myelin sheaths speed that up. It actually speeds up the nerve transmission dramatically. And when those get attacked, we have a slowing of that transmission. So people have difficulty walking and urinating and all sorts of things. And lots more. I just wanted to give you an example. So the common autoimmune diseases, Hashimoto's, thyroid, type 1 diabetes, pancreas, lupus, connecting the blood and a lot of other organs, scleroderma, the connective tissue, Crohn's and ulcerative colitis in the gut, rheumatoid arthritis in the joints, Sjogren's in the mucous membrane, celiac in the gut, and that's related to gluten, multiple sclerosis, and on. So how do we test it? I can't go through every single one, but I'll give you an idea of some of the antibodies that can be tested. And up until, you know, half a dozen years ago or so, your doctor had to decide, well, maybe there's an autoimmune disease of this organ or that organ, and order these all separately. And it could cost thousands of dollars to do that. But now there's a test that a lab called Cyrex, C-Y-R-E-X, runs, where you can do it. It's still expensive. It's like $550, but it will run 35 different common antibodies. And people say, well, wouldn't I know I have that disease? You would know after it's been there a while and you develop symptoms there. But oftentimes you can detect these things decades even before the disease goes in full blown where there's serious damage. And I'll give you an example, two examples of that. One was a story I heard from Tom O'Brien, Dr. Tom O'Brien, and he had a patient come in whose father and brother and everybody in his family was dropping dead of heart attacks. Like all the males were dropping dead of heart attacks in their, I think it was their 40s. And this guy was approaching that age. And he's like, I don't want to die. Like, do a full workup, everything you know how to do. And it turned out he had three antibodies attacking the heart. And it was likely that all of those people, he also had a gluten sensitivity. He got put on a leaky gut protocol, got off of gluten, and, you know, took away the stressors, all the things we talked about. And 6 months later, the antibodies were gone. So in his family, those antibodies attacked really like in the background and cause sudden heart attack and death. And he didn't want to wait till having a sudden heart attack or death. He found out early. I've had people where we go in and do thyroid testing, and it's part of a routine thyroid test is to do the antibodies. And I've had people who their thyroid hormones were still fine, but the antibodies were elevated. So we knew right then that we could protect their thyroid from failing. Who knows how long, 6 months, 6 years down the road. And then the other story was Tom O'Brien himself, who when that test first came out, he ran it on himself and it came back and it showed that he had three different brain antibodies. And he went back to the lab. Oh, this must be somebody else. My brain is perfectly fine. I do research. I speak. My brain's perfectly fine. He goes, yeah, we thought that too. And we ran it a second time. You have those brain antibodies. So he put himself on a more rigorous program. That's when he decided almost gluten-free wasn't enough because he wouldn't pay attention if he was out. He got rigorous about it, put himself on the healing leaky gut protocol, stress results, and 6 months later, his antibodies were gone. But imagine what would have happened if he hadn't done that. He's a healthy guy, right? He's doing most of the things right. And he didn't know about this. He could have suddenly like, my memory's going a little bit and maybe it's just age, and suddenly developed some sort of brain disorder or Alzheimer's type of thing because he didn't know and he wasn't correcting it. So that's the thing. We have ANA, which are antibodies that attack the joints. It's a very anti-nuclear. It attacks the nucleus of the cell. So this can be widespread and is used as a marker a lot of autoimmune disease. Rheumatoid factor, RF, intrinsic factor antibodies, candida antibodies even, you can tell. And the candida antibodies often cross-react with our own tissue. Lyme antibodies, myelin antibodies, Purkinje cells in the brain, cerebellar. So we can test all these. And the Cyrex Array 5 is a test that does that. immune disorder. And I don't run that often. I prefer to get people to do all the things that I would want them to do if it came back positive, to do it anyway. But some people aren't convinced. They want to see the results. So that's what I recommend. This is just a little bit more detailed, but there's these things called T helper cells. There's cytotoxic and antibody ones. And these kinds of T cells that are helping the body to respond to autoimmune, to an attack, to an allergy, to an infectious disease. And in this is just general, but that these diseases are also oftentimes associated with a T helper cell 1 overreaction, and these others are by a T helper 2. But like I said, it's just, it's not absolute. And then there's certain nutrients that will help to support in T1s and T2s. And based on a particular condition, you can look at increasing those nutrients and see if it helps. So I want to talk about managing inflammation, because so much of the damage that's caused when the body starts creating these antibodies is as a result of inflammation. And there's three main things that I'll mention: the role of fats in the inflammatory cycle, the anti-inflammatory nutrients, and then the role of stress. So this, you might have seen me show this before, but this is something that happens in all the cells in your body in this area called the membrane, the mast cell membrane. And this is happening all throughout your body, that we take our omega-3 and 6. This side is omega. Oh, I'm pointing to the wrong place. Let me get this out of the way. Omega-3 is this side, alpha-linolenic acid, and omega-6 is the linoleic acid. That's in foods, and I'll show you the way that we can manipulate this with nutrition on the next couple of slides. Those get converted into these things called prostaglandins, and they are anti-inflammatory or inflammatory. These particular ones here are anti-inflammatory, and they help the body to reduce this arachidonic acid, which leads to the inflammatories. And so these, we think of these as our firefighters, these PG1s and DGLA. These are all the firefighters, and they kill off, you know, and they slow down the production of these leukotrienes. And when these get activated, you're in a lot of pain and inflammation. And that's what happens in autoimmune disease. And like I said, they're all produced in this mast cell, right? That same thing I just showed you is happening in these mast cell membranes. Now with drugs, like, so the typical approach to autoimmune disease is we're going to put people on steroids. We're going to put them on non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. If that doesn't work, we'll put on steroids. And most heavy duty autoimmune disease protocols include steroids. And they put them on steroids because why? Because it interferes with the conversion of the alpha-linolenic and the linoleic acids down to these prostaglandins. So what's wrong with this picture? Well, I already said that these prostaglandins are our firefighters. So when we take NSAIDs or steroids, yeah, we're displacing all of the inflammation, but we're also killing our firefighters. So if you stop taking it, your firefighters are dead. Now you have to build those up. Not a great approach. The NSAIDs just work down here. The steroids work up here. So that's why steroids are stronger. Okay. So if we want to approach this in a way that we support and we feed our firefighters, we look at nutritional modulation. So instead of breaking down at this pathway, we support this pathway, and we support it with foods that do this. We support this enzyme called delta 6 desaturase, which helps us to convert these short chain fatty acids into these long chain, and then the prostaglandins that are anti-inflammatory that become our firefighters. So these are all the nutrients that are important. You know, several B vitamins, vitamin C, biotin, zinc, magnesium. If you don't have enough of those nutrients, your body can't produce the anti-inflammatory chemicals, the EPA, DHA, from the food you're eating. And yeah, you can take fish oils. You can take fish oils and supply it here, right? But you can also, if you want to get the most out of your chia seeds and your flax seeds and your short chains, you need to make sure all of these are in order. Now, for the average American, they're screwed because the diet, the refined foods are missing all these nutrients. That's why we propose a whole foods, antioxidant-rich plant-based diet that includes a lot of these nutrients that the body needs, right? And when needed, supplementation, especially if it's been going on for a long time, at least temporarily, supplementation to support that, right? And so vitamin E, curcumin, right? This is where some of those wonderful anti-inflammatory herbs that we talk about, turmeric, right here, it helps to prevent the production of this arachidonic acid. Ginger, vitamin E, the EPA, you can take as fish oils or zinc and selenium. These all help to prevent this pathway, prevent the arachidonic acid from getting converted downstream. Is it 100%? No, obviously not. But, and we need arachidonic acid to produce inflammation. If you cut your finger and you want it to heal, you need it. You need a process of this, the right amount, the Goldilocks principle, right? Not too little, not too much, just right. If we take the drugs and we shut all those pathways off, it's not the Goldilocks principle. And it, I mean, technically we can overdo with these anti-inflammatory nutrients. If you have a real injury that needs to be healed, in the beginning stages, it's not a good idea to be doing it. But this is the what happens as it progresses and the body can't turn off the inflammation. These nutrients are super important. These are always important to be able to produce these anti-inflammatory chemicals from our foods. Is this making sense? Yeah? Okay. So what do you do about it? Well, you want to avoid the inhibitors of that DHA and EPA. And like we always, a lot of people get confused between DHEA, which is an adrenal hormone, and DHA, which is a fat. So these are the things that we avoid. All of the stuff we've been talking about in all of our talks throughout Vital and throughout the other programs is avoiding trans fats, margarine, shortening, hydrogenated fats, heated omega-3 and 6 fats, excess of omega-6. We talk a lot about omega-3 and 6 balance. So you may be like drinking almond milk all day. Not a good idea unless you're also equivalently balancing it with your omega-3s. This is why I have people, I give you a chart, like if people have been in Sweet Spot, get my omega-3 6 spreadsheet that you can use, or you can go online and go to an app like Chronometer, and it'll show you your omega-3 6 balance. Excess of olive oil, you know, so a little olive oil is okay. And I'm not a big fan of oils in general. I like to eat the real food. So I eat olives instead of drinking olive oil. Cases where you're underweight, you need the extra calories, you've got some disrupted gut, and you need it, yeah, fine. There's therapeutic uses of oils. But all this stuff, the sugar, caffeine, alcohol, food additives, deficiency of protein. Most people, I will say, unless you're on a really severely calorie-restricted diet, are not deficient in protein because of low protein intake. They're deficient in protein because of poor stomach acid, poor digestive function, and not really getting the right amount of protein into the system. And then deficiencies of these nutrients that I showed you in the previous slide, biotin, vitamin E, zinc, B12, B6, and of course smoking. So all these things interfere. Now you wanna promote the DHA and EPA synthesis. When you take in coconut, not necessarily coconut oil because it's high fat, right? The whole coconut that has your protein and carb and nutrients in it. I like to use coconut either as coconut cream, as coconut flakes, as, you know, coconut, right, eaten out of the coconut. But the lauric acid and the mesteric acid in the oil part is actually helpful in converting your short chain omega-3 that's in your flax and chia, et cetera, down into it. Actually, some studies show 10 times the conversion when you include a coconut product with your omega-3. So you'll see a lot of my recipes will have like a chia porridge with coconut in it, right? That's why. And then these other nutrients that we talked about in that pathway, super, super important. And then how do you quench the fire of autoimmunity? Well, vitamin D and vitamin D deficiency is so rampant. I see it all the time on people's tests. And part of it is they go to their doctor and the doctor tests their vitamin C and say, hey, you have a vitamin D of 35. You're in the ideal range. Congratulations. No. We see a lot more autoimmunity and cancer in people whose numbers are below 75. So I like to get people in the 75 to 100 range on D. Now, there's other factors that play in. You may have some genetic predispositions to low vitamin D because of things like this thing called VDR, which is a SNP that you might have, and there's a bunch of others. Vitamin C is super important. It modulates the activities of all of the inflammatory chemicals in the body, in the immune system. And so if we have enough vitamin C, it can calm down the inflammation. Same with zinc. It's important for this thing called phagocytosis. If you think about Pac-Man, the old video game, right? And you have this little guy, it's like, oh, gobble, gobble, gobble. That's what your phagocytes are, your macrophages. They go gobble, 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 and they gobble up the bad guys. And zinc is important for that. Your fats, like we just talked about, in the modulation of inflammation. And then other antioxidants like glutathione, SOD, catalase, vitamins A, C, and E. These are important. And a lot of people do have genetic SNPs in these areas. So we have to make sure that we're keeping the pathways open and then supplementing when needed, right? If you have genetic SNPs, I've seen people with genetic SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, that would slow down the production of glutathione, SOD, and catalase. I've seen people with RED, meaning they have, you know, fully impaired, both parents gave them a bad SNP in all of these. And in that case, I'm recommending, let's go ahead and get you supplementation properly for a while with this while we work on building up the diet and decreasing the need. And then some of the minerals, selenium, manganese, copper, super, super important. And then the sulfur-containing amino acids. Now, you can't just go and say, okay, I'm going to take everything here. You might be disrupting the apple cart, as they say, right? You might not be able to handle all of that at the same time. And you may have specific deficiencies in the genetic pathways that make it cause a problem. But for the most part, we're looking at doing it first dietarily and lifestyle, and then with supplementation. And it helps to have somebody who can support you in finding out what that exactly is. So this is just going to be a review for you, the immune-enhancing diet and lifestyle factors. We want to eat a whole foods antioxidant-rich diet that's high in greens, fruits, and vegetables. Fruits according to your specific genetic needs or current needs about maintaining blood sugar. Fat balance, omega-3s, right? Making sure you're eating those good sources, but avoiding the heated and processed fats. People say to me, well, I was, you know, 100% raw food for years, and I eat cooked food now, but I won't eat cooked fats. I won't eat cooked fats because once you cook them, they create oxidative byproducts that damage the good fats. Reduce or eliminate the arachidonic acid-rich foods, meat, dairy, eggs, and processed foods, but also peanuts. And peanuts are high in a mold, a mycotoxin called aflatoxin. So we do need to be careful with peanuts. Like I always have people, if you're doing peanut butter, to switch to sunflower butter, almond butter, cashew butter, tahini, whatever, instead of the peanut butter. It takes a little getting used to, but avoiding gluten, dairy, and allergens because they can cause that leaky gut, that cross-reactivity. And you do have to heal that leaky gut. And you may have to go on a leaky gut healing protocol. It doesn't mean to run out to the internet and buy all the leaky gut repair products. You'd be confused as heck to try to do that. There's a ton of them, right? We need to do it appropriately, and there are some nutrients that you can use. One of the most common nutrients that are used to heal leaky gut is glutamine. But in people with particular genetic SNPs, can't take glutamine without getting anxious and aggravated and irritable, right? So there's a lot that goes into this, and it really does help to work with a health coach who can support you in this. Avoidance of environmental toxins. And those of you who are in ERC, we're going to go through all this with you. You're going to get the support you need to take care of this. Avoidance of environmental toxins, right? How is your house? That's where you start. What are your cleaning products? What kind of things do you have? Yeah, you're not going to go in and rip out all your rugs right from the start, but we did that. We did that because my son was waking up every morning with postnasal drip. And he was like 3 years old. And we're like, what the heck is going on with him? He's fine. When he's outside, he's fine all day long, but he's having a problem. I got something in the bedroom, and we got some mold plates, and we put the mold plates in there. Sure enough, it was off the charts for mold in his bedroom. We tore out everything. We tore out the carpeting. We tore out the liner between it. We let it air out for a while. Then we went in and put in bamboo. And he stopped having that problem, right? So we had to, we cleaned it up. I'm always careful about what kind of fragrances. We don't use air fresheners. We use, you know, like orange oil or lemon oil mixed with water and just spray it around if somebody wants a pleasant spray smell in the area. So avoidance of all those environmental toxins. Those of you in ERC, we do have that whole module on avoiding that and an inventory of that. Sugar, don't eat it. Like, simple as that. That's all I can say. We shouldn't be eating any processed sugar. Be careful of medications, because a lot of these have problems that stir up the immune system, that deplete the immune system and its ability to handle things. Managing stress, exercise, sleep, those are all the things. Go back and let you just see that, right? These are the main things we've been teaching you. If you've been in Vital for a while, you hear this stuff over and over. If you've been in any of the practitioner trainings, you hear this over and over. If you've been in ERC or currently, you're going to hear this over and over. And it's not so easy to just say, do this, but we have to, it's really important. If you don't want to go down that path of an autoimmune disease and get that diagnosis, it's important that we make those changes. So how do we heal autoimmune disease? Well, we can't change the genetic predisposition, but we can check the genes and avoid exposures to things that our body may not have the machinery. We can support it with the extra nutrition via food or supplements that will support the genetic expression. We'll turn off the genes that are going to predispose us to autoimmune disease. Avoid gluten. That's a big one with the genetic predisposition. We can reduce our toxic load. We can address the nutrient deficiencies. We can address the stress and emotional trauma, and we can heal the leaky gut. So it's all in our hands, your hands, to reverse this. It's not going to get reversed by going to your Western trained medical doctor, because all they know is how to give you steroids. They're not going to go through this. And it's a process. It's a process. It takes time and attention. There's a lot of great books on the market right now that you can look into. Tom O'Brien has one called the Autoimmune Fix. Dr. Keisha has one called the Solving the Autoimmune Puzzle, which really addresses the emotional piece. Dr. Tom addresses a lot of the toxic pieces and the food pieces. And just stick with us in these programs and follow what we're teaching, because you have the ability to change your health. You have the ability to support a healthy immune system. It's just going to take focus and attention, and it's not going to happen overnight. So that's it for my formal presentation. Do we have any questions, comments? Anybody want to share anything? Was this helpful? I mean, you might have gotten a few new things here. A lot of it is preaching to the choir, I know. But questions, comments? Yeah, Lynn, go ahead.
I have to press something, right? Press 6 or something like that if I wanted to speak, or what?
No, there's a raise hand, but you're speaking right now, so you're good.
I never do that, you know, and I just, okay. Anyway, what is this mold plates that you put in your...
Oh, they're available. In fact, I'm going to look into see what the latest, I ordered them years and years ago from Dr. Sherry Rogers, and she has this whole thing with
Sherry Rogers?
Yeah, her company, she was associated with a company that did that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if she still does. I've been listening to the Mold and Toxicity Summit right now, and they have a few people in there, and I want to see what the latest and the greatest in the technology is for that. There's other ways you can do it. The plates are good. Now, the plates won't show if it's a lower level. Sometimes you need to actually do like scrapings of different pieces, things on the windowsill and all that, and then put them on and do it. But there's a lot of great information and a lot of great mold remediation that happens. For us, fortunately, it wasn't like the worst, you know, toxic mold stuff. It was enough that it was irritating to him. And when we removed it, he was fine. We didn't seem to, like, some people have to get rid of everything, anything cloth, get rid of the bedding, move. We didn't have to do that. Because I was aware and I caught it. Many parents, when the kid wakes up coughing in the morning, they just give him an antihistamine. give them a decongestant, give them cough syrup, and don't think anything of it because it's a mild symptom. Because of my training and my awareness, any little things, my kids couldn't have any symptom without me going, okay, what's going on? They were the healthiest kids around because we kept the environment clean. Of course, it's not perfect. They live in the world, right? And so we had to address it, but we were fortunate. But these mold plates are very simple. They were very inexpensive, maybe $5 or $10 a piece. This was, you know, he's 22 now, and this is when he was three. So it's that 19 years ago. It's a long time ago. And it was when we first moved into the house. I think we were here for a couple of years by the time we actually went and did the whole remediation and pulled out all the carpeting and put in the bamboo.
Rita Marie, if you're sauteing any food, do you saute in water?
Mm-hmm.
Add oil? Is that what you do?
Yeah. 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 And you know who's really good at that? If you're on the Unstoppable page, look at Sandy Zeitman is always throwing up pictures of her beautiful water saute, right? And what I've done on that Unstoppable site, if you go in there, there's a thing that says units at the top. You click there and I've got a bunch of units where I've tried to take posts and put them in categories. So I have one post with recipes and the majority of the recipes in there are Sandy or Liz because they're always posting. But if you post a recipe to Unstoppable, I'll go in there and I'll put it into that units place so that people can find it. Because I found for myself that I went, where'd that recipe that Liz posted, this amazing recipe for a yogurt pie, and I want to make it. And like, I'm scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and can't find it. So I thought, well, if I make them units and I put the recipes in the units, you can find these cool recipes that other people have done.
How do people join? You can join Vital separately, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Go to vitalhealthcommunity.com. So if you want to refer anybody to just join Vital, they can do that. They don't have to be part of ERC to get it. And many people here are just in Vital.
Yeah, I have a few people that I'd like to.
Mm-hmm.
Per month again?
It's like $19 a month. And we're going to be changing that early next year. Right now, it's $19 a month or $24 a month or something like that. But if you sign up for the whole year, you get access to the library, like the whole library of amazing stuff that's been there forever, like 8 years worth. And early next year, that's going to shift. So they won't be getting all that because it's like, oh, yeah, we're just giving up everything for $200. It's like, whoo. And then it's overwhelming. So we're going to be shifting things a little bit. So have them do it before the end of the year and they'll be grandfathered in.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. And some of you have been here from the very beginning. Beatrice, I think you were part of this before it was even called Vital, right?
Oh, Dr. Rita Marie, when the sweet spot was still before Begone. Yeah. That's when I started with you, actually from around 2007. So I've been here forever and ever. And it's very interesting that I got on today without knowing what the topic was going to be because I've missed these meetings for a long time. Now that I'm at home and I have nothing to do, I'm trying to do everything, which makes it absolutely worse. And first I want to say that your program really works because when I started with Before Be Gone, Now Sweet Spot, I just followed the program because I wanted to take charge of the pre-diabetic situation that I was in, but somehow the Hashimoto's that I had disappeared also.
Yeah, within like 4 months, right? That was what was so amazing.
I'll tell you something. I liked the way I was eating so much and I felt so good that I continued with Before Be Gone. I didn't change what I was eating at all. So I thought it was very good. Anyway, I lost a lot of weight, which was not what I intended. But when I went to see, I had been taking cortisone because I had something called panhypopituitarism, which means basically that my immune system was a mess. And I had moved.
Your pituitary gland was not functioning properly.
It wasn't functioning.
Stimulates everything. So all of the pituitary hormones, the ones that stimulate the cortisol, the ones that stimulate the thyroid, the ones that stimulate, there's all these hormones, growth hormone, etc. Hers wasn't functioning.
It wasn't functioning. And I had been taking cortisone for a long time. For about a year and a half, which is forever for me. Anyway, I moved from Central Florida to where I live now, and I had to change doctors. And my doctor from Central Florida, my endocrinologist, kept saying, don't forget to be tested. And she would email me and said, you have to be tested, you have to be tested. And when I was tested at the University of Florida, the doctor said, I think they made a mistake because you don't seem to have anything that I see in your records. And I kept saying, I've had thyroid problems since I was around 12 years old, on and off, and taking thyroids and the adrenals. My mother had, it was a family thing. My family's had just about everything that I was in. And she kept testing me and saying, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong. Finally, she got to the point where she said, look at your nails. You have beautiful nails. People who have thyroid problems don't have those nails. I hadn't looked at my nails that way for a long time. But yes, the Hashimoto disappeared with a hell of a lot of other things. So it is this excellent program. And just follow it. That's all I can say. Just follow it the best you can. But I'll have to tell you something. Dr. Rita Marine, we call her the miracle worker in my house because she did work miracles with me. But at the same time, she will admit to you that I was a pain in the behind because I kept asking questions and asking questions and asking questions, and sometimes two and three times because I would misunderstand them or I would forget them. And she was very patient with me, and I followed everything that she said I was supposed to do. I actually did it.
And you were not a pain in the behind. You were actually, I love working with you because you do. I knew you'd do it. Once you got it, once you understood it, you were going to do it and you were going to get results.
So that's right.
Whatever it takes, if it takes you asking questions, I didn't understand this or I didn't understand that, ask me. I like answering questions.
And so, yeah, I would do it. I would just do it. When she said no bread, I would have no bread. And when she said don't eat anything after 6 o'clock, being Mexican, I would sometimes eat at 2:30 in the afternoon. That's our lunch hour in Mexico. And there was, let's say I would finish at 3, and there were no 5 hours between 3 and 5:30 or 6. So I would say, well, I can't have anything until tomorrow. But the funny thing is this, when you decide to do something and you know that you have someone who knows what they're doing helping you, the body changes. Because I wouldn't feel hunger. I don't know if it was because I convinced myself that I wasn't hungry. All I know is that I couldn't eat after 6 o'clock and I couldn't eat anything within a 5 hour period. So that was that. I didn't know that was later to be intermittent fasting. But
you weren't calling it that then, but you know, from being in the first Before Begone, we actually did talk about it in the last module, but
that's right.
We encouraged intermittent fasting.
That's right.
It was before it was popular. Had I known it was going to get so popular, I would have popularized it then, and maybe I'd be rich and famous right now, right?
Because that's right.
That's what we were doing. That's what I was teaching.
Well, it is the same. When I hear something new, I say, well, I know that from where? Well, from Dr. Rita Marie. That's all there is to it. So I hate to sound like this, but it changed my life. It changed my life. My youngest son is a cultural anthropologist with a PhD in medical anthropology, and he works with Native Americans and diabetes. So the first time he sat down to talk to me to see what I had done, because I have a very strong family history of diabetes, and that was my one and only concern. He ended up saying, with all the awe and the respect in the world, he said, Mama, you change your lifestyle, and you look and feel so much better, and you're so much happier. And that's what it is. It sounds like a lot of hard work, but if it's really important for you, you go ahead and do it.
You know, it's interesting. You say hard work and people say hard work, but you know, anybody who's had a baby knows easy work was probably carrying the baby and pushing it out through this little tiny opening, right? Because then once they were born, you had to raise them. So having a baby and raising a kid, that's hard work. That's hard work. Going to college, right? And studying and passing tests and going, that's hard work. So we know how to do the hard work. We've been conditioned since we were little that every pain has a pill. You just eat what you want to, when you want to, enjoy yourself, go out to the restaurant, go here. That's the easy lifestyle. And so it's shifting those belief systems around food and around how the body heals. And the body doesn't heal from medications. You were on how many medications and you were still like not getting.
Oh my, like crazy. I was on just about everything. the worst part was cortisone. That I kept asking the doctors when I was going to get out of cortisone, because cortisone made me not only hungry, I was obese to start off with. Then my body became very fluffy, like sort of like, you know, cotton candy, something like that. And I kept saying, when am I going to get out of cortisone? And the doctor kept saying, if you get off cortisone, you're going to die. Not only my endocrinologist, but my primary care physician. And they would scare me like crazy. You are going, and finally my husband went with me to see the doctor, because he said, every day you say, when am I going to get off cortisone? So the doctor said, you're not going to get out of cortisone ever. You have to take it. Your adrenals are not working. Cortisone and thyroid medicine. If you stop taking it, you are going to die. And I went home. Now, I have taught mindfulness-based stress reduction for 30 years. I'm a meditation instructor. So on the drive home, while my husband was telling me, repeating what the doctor had said, I said, okay, so how can I do this mindfully? So I said, the only thing I can think of, this was before Dr. Rita Marie, the only thing I can think of is maybe exercise a little bit more, and maybe try not to eat at 2 o'clock in the morning when I woke up wanting pasta or bread with mayonnaise and cheese, and just pay attention to what I'm doing. And I would go to the doctor every 3 months to be checked with the cortisone. And about 6 months afterwards, the second visit, she said, you're walking different, Beatrice. You're walking different. How do you feel? And I said, I feel fine. She said, well, you haven't lost any weight. And I said, I know, but I feel better. Actually, I was just being mindful, paying attention to what I was doing. She had me tested, and she called me back and she said, I don't know what happened. I'm having you tested again, because the tests say that you don't need any more cortisone, and that's impossible. Mm. And so she cut the cortisone way down, and then she stopped it just before I moved. That was her concern, that I get tested again. Mm-hmm. She said, you cannot live without cortisone or thyroid, so I need you tested again. In between those 6 months, I worked with Dr. Rita Marie, and you should know that I did not work with her personally. I really did make a pain of myself. I was part of a group, and I just followed what she said, and I did it because I knew, and I say, and I knew in the middle of my bones, that this female, and I don't say that nasty, I say it with love and respect, this female really knew what she was talking about.
You've been off of those for how long now? It's like when
was the first Before Be Gone, Dr. Rita Marie?
2011. So it's
that's it.
Yeah. So
you've been then.
Yeah. And you're still alive, and you're in your 70s.
I'm 75. I'm 75. Yeah. And that's all there is.
That's a good testament to autoimmune diseases are not life sentences. They don't have to be. And it's finding the right combination of stuff to make it work for you.
Well, I found out about a lot of things that I could have been taking them. I was just eating good food and walking 3 times a day out in the sunlight and sleeping, basically.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Thank you so much for
sharing. I hope I didn't bore everyone, but thank you. I had to say that.
You inspired people. Like, yeah. Thank you so much. And I see Ageless and Joyous, who's that, has got her hand up, or his hand up, maybe. Daniela, oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's me. It's got a longer name. So good to be here. It's very inspiring. It's really great. So I had a naturopath had discovered that I had anti-TPO 270, and I was already gluten-free, but also, like, not completely carefully, not a restaurant, or which was rare, but like, whatever, there was a crumb of something. So I became even more strict, and I had already stopped dairy products as well, except for butter, which I had a little bit. And so in 11 months after that, and having worked with an energy medicine doctor, Dr. Stephen Daniel, to clear out pathogens, because he said it had to do with, he found some viruses that had affected that spike. And 11 months later, I was down to 135.
Nice.
And that was, I can have a look quick where when we did that. That was in May 2017. I haven't checked again since then. I have to go for another checkup.
It would be good to see. Greg, congratulations.
But what was strange was, and all, like, my thyroid hormones are fine, and I'm full of energy. I take iodine. I was taking iodine a few days before, already, years before, and it was so helpful to me.
Yeah.
Detoxified iodine. But I have a question. Vitamin D, first of all, I heard that when they're checking, if you send the same sample to, I don't know, hundreds of labs around the world, you're going to get really big changes, like really big ranges. Dr. Gregor was talking about that.
Interesting.
So sometimes it could be showing as if you were really low and sometimes really high.
I haven't noticed that, but I haven't sent to hundreds of labs around the world. I've just noticed, like, testing somebody from one time to another. But that's interesting to note.
Why I'm asking about that is that when I would have a regular blood test for vitamin D, it came up to like something like 110, and the doctor would freak out. And so the naturopath that I went to see about 4 years ago, he did a regular blood test, and then he also ran the spectrocell. Mm-hmm. And on the spectrocell, and my blood test showed about 110 or so.
Okay.
Because I take high doses. You know, if somebody has a cold around me or whatever, maybe I had just taken a higher dose. I don't know. But the spectrocell showed 48. He didn't like that.
Well, it's a different number, though. It's not measuring the serum in spectrocell. It's measuring the insides of the white blood cells.
Yeah.
So what's that saying is that what's in your serum wasn't necessarily getting into the cells. So the white blood cell is just one type of cell. So it's a good indication that even though it was in the serum, it may not have been getting into the destination cells as it should. And that could be a vitamin D SNP, a receptor SNP. So that, which would mean that the higher level in your blood is not dangerous. And 110 is just a little over the top of the range. I got freaked out when I get people coming back with 200s and then, okay, let's do something here.
Right. Yes. This is what Dr. Gregor was talking about too. It has to be like over 200 or so when you start wondering. But my question is though, so my mother's family, she had a whole bunch of siblings. Two of them are still alive, but one of them has autoimmune disease right now. A couple things with their eyes and Parkinson's. The others died of either suicide, or the other one that's alive now also was like the twin of the suicide, unfortunately, so she's mentally not well. But there was like a lot of thyroid stuff going on with the family. Mm-hmm. But other than that, they all died from cancer, a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a young age, but all cancer.
Yeah.
Like my grandparents and my mother's sisters and brother. And I had carcinoma in my inside too at age 20-something.
Your genetics, you know, there's likely there's some genetic factors there in the immune system is a likelihood because of the way that, you know, cancer is an immune system failure, really. It's also a metabolic disease, and, you know, blood sugar imbalances can contribute to it, anything that would create inflammation.
And I did IRSBT, it's the second time I'm going through it now, but I did it 6 years ago, and I was shocked to see that I had insulin resistance. I'm asking you all this because I had the antibodies, I had the resistance, there is cancer in the family, and my vitamin D is not optimal. I'm planning to do something about getting genetic testing. I haven't done it yet, see what's going on there. But what can I do in the meantime? Like, should I just really be supplementing a lot more with vitamin D?
That's a tough question to answer, because if it's 110, I would not feel comfortable telling you to supplement it unless I knew more. But given that the spectrocell showed that it was low, so, you know, intracellular, like maybe work on things that will improve your cellular absorption types of things. You're looking at your fats, your omega-3-6 balance, because that makes your cell membranes and whether they're hyperpermeable or permeable or stiff could be important there.
I am doing that. I'm taking the omega-3s and I'm eating a lot of...
Have you tested? I would do a blood spot fatty acid to see if it may be broken down. It's not expensive test. It's like $150, I think, to do. And that'll give you an idea.
Right, because in terms of food, I'm really...
Look to make sure that you're doing it properly and that you're getting all of those vitamins that I showed you, the B's and all.
I am. I actually am. I'm also supplementing.
Did they all show up okay on the spectra?
I'm eating, I don't do so much chia because I tend to make kidney stones, but I have a little bit. A lot of sprouted flaxseed and a lot of, instead of protein powder, I'm just taking a lot of hemp seeds directly.
So that's it sounds like you're doing a lot of good stuff.
Supplements of DHA,
And it doesn't mean that the whole thing is the pathways are going to look good. So I would look at those pathways. Okay. You want to look at your absorption, your conversions, those sorts of things.
So in terms of absorptions, I've had this stuff going on digestively, and I'm just wondering, because you're talking about autoimmune, because I've developed it, right? And I live very healthily. I'm like really.
It sounds like
everybody says you're a fanatic, right? So I am. I'm not talking about you. I'm doing all these self care things and how I eat. You know, my smoothie in the morning is filled with dandelions that I dig up with a root and other kind of greens that I've, you know, what people call weeds, right? And that goes into my smoothie, a ton of it. Like, that's how I eat those type of things. So. I just found out another connection that maybe I'm wondering if that is contributing to inflammation that is aggravating things, and that's the hydrogen sulfate SIBO.
SIBO will contribute to lack of absorption properly.
And so I don't think I have the ones that you can test, the hydrogen and the methane type. But then I just found out more recently. And I see that Dr. Pimentel and that crowd started talking about it. I found out by somebody who wrote a book called The Devil in the Garlic, like that. Super important, I think, to really look into. He connected with Stephanie Seneff about the whole saltation and all that. And so the way that we like to eat in this tribe over here, there's a lot of high sulfur foods.
Yep. And that's why I suggested the genetic testing, right? Because we don't know, right? There's no one perfect way to eat for everyone. And we have to look at all of the factors involved and then create like what's the best. You know, there's so many of these, what I call the food religions, right? Low sulfur, low histamine, low this, low that. And if you would listen to all of them, you would have nothing to eat.
So
fasting. So, yeah. Which is fine temporarily, but it's not a lifelong approach. So I think it's really, that's what we do in our ERC, is we take people through a whole set of processes and tests and all to see what's your specific things. Because there's a lot of people that are eating pretty well, but it may not be right for them at this particular point in time.
Yeah, so I am actually like doing whatever he's suggesting now so that I can get that enzyme that makes a certain conversion to kick in again. And then you start reintroducing the foods. Right. You can't stay off of them forever. They're fantastic foods.
Right.
Yeah. So just, I was wondering if, you know, that could be contributing to this inflammatory kind of
absolutely.
Situation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because the naturopath said when we looked at my markers that it was a bit high. He wasn't thrilled, even though, you know, the way I live and what I do.
Yeah,
yoga,
so it's all these little things, right, that contribute. And, you know, here's what I was always taught was when you hear hoof beats, think horses, not zebras. So we think horses, like, let's start out. Are you getting enough of these foods? Is your digestive tract working? What's your stress level? We go through the basics. And then if the basics aren't working, like there's still some issues there, then you have to look at the zebras, right? You have to look at these little odd biochemical pathway changes that you might have to address. But that's not the place to start, right? Telling people to everybody needs to go off all sulfur foods and everybody needs to go off all whatever histamine foods. It's not true. And I'm in the process of trying to create like a nice chart that people can check off the various symptoms to see if there's suggestion of particular areas, particular types of foods that they may have sensitivities to based on the chemical structure. But also then you look at the genetics, right? There's specific genetics that might be playing in there. And so the genetics without the exposures, I'm sure you weren't born eating this way, right? Not like me. I mean, I eat a phenomenal diet, but like, you know, the Kool-Aid and the Ronzoni and the...
I was born in Czechoslovakia, so not the American food, but, you know, it was like cooked, some cooked vegetables. There wasn't much rhyming in the winter.
Yeah. So we weren't all, you know, so we mucked up our mechanisms early on, and then we have to do the work later to correct them, right? So
yeah, I want to know in terms of vitamin D, is there, in your experience, is there ever an appropriate time for someone to take vitamin D2?
There might be. I mean, I've seen some weird stuff, and I actually had somebody who was taking all this D, and her D wasn't going up. It wasn't going up, and she just said, "Forget it. I'm going to try the D2," and she did, and it worked. Mm-hmm. So I think there's still a lot we don't know there. And, you know, as long as it's not an unsafe thing to do, right? Like drinking something cool, kooky, right? It's something that, you try it for a couple of months and see if it makes a difference. Right. Mushrooms produce it. So a lot of mushrooms, if they've been, you know, in a sunny environment and they've been exposed to the sun, they actually have a good amount of D2. Actually, some of them have D3, but yeah.
Okay, so that I will.
I would try it, you know. Yes. And the other thing is to do the 125 hydroxy D, because what's done is the lower one, but the activated form. So there may be a problem in the activation, right? So that's why it's not getting into the cells, and it could be like in the kidney or liver, because that's where a lot of that conversion happens. So those are the, you know, like the zebras, we go, okay, it's not working, okay, let's just look to see what else. Okay, is it a kidney issue? Is there, you know, an issue with an enzyme in the kidney? Is it an issue in the liver, right?
I'm just looking if which ones he did, because it was naturopath.
Usually they just do the 25.
Okay.
And the one on the 25 is like $150 instead of $50. So it's a more expensive test. But I would do both at the same time, so you can compare like what's the levels to see. You know, whenever we want to check pathways, we want to check multiple chemicals and see where the breakdown in the pathway may happen.
Awesome.
Good question. Got everybody kind of thinking. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We have about, we're over time. So if there's any other pressing questions, I don't see anybody's hand up. Oh, I do see. Leah, did you have one more? Quick.
Thank you very much for today. Yeah. Dr. Rita Marie, I struggle definitely with my fats, and because I can't eat the nuts, and we won't go into that. But what black seed oil,
yeah. It's strong. It's black cumin oil, basically, and it has a strong flavor. It's very nice, but you use a little bit. But it's been shown to be phenomenal for thyroid health and for inflammation and autoimmune stuff. So
would that be down the GLA route rather than the EPA? I just want
to... Here's the thing with black seed. It's like a therapeutic. It's like between an oil and an essential oil, where you're only having a small amount. So I don't think the amount in there is going to make a difference. And it's easy to make up by having a little hemp. You know what I mean? Something like that to make up for it.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but it's very therapeutic. It's not really I don't call it a culinary herb, although it tastes good and you can use it, but you can't, you know, if you're going to have to take large amounts therapeutically, you're probably going to get them in capsules because it's strong, right? You just put like a quarter of a teaspoon or an eighth of a teaspoon in a dish, and it's phenomenal flavor. But once you get beyond that, imagine like loading something up with cumin. Yeah. It's like a little bit much after a bit.
So with GLA, do you know of a product that, because over here, I mean, GLA definitely has worked for me in the past. I know it has.
Yeah. Orange, black currant.
But pouring, because they're all encapsulated in something that's...
I think Barleans makes a borage. I've got some in my fridge. I think it's a borage, and they make it in a liquid. It's in the black container, kind of like the flax, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay, because I can't find it that's not got maize or corn encapsulated.
It may be, yeah. And the other thing with that is you can always take a pin and squeeze them out. It's pain, but you can squeeze them out onto a teaspoon and then take it that way.
Yeah. Okay, lovely. Yeah.
Okay, thank you guys. Thank you for being here. We'll see you next time. We'll talk to you soon. I hope this is helpful. Bye-bye now.
Bye.